Kind of fast, kind of not. Either way, always running or talking about it. Welcome to the Kind of Fast podcast, powered by Upward Running. Let's get into it.
Hello, and welcome back to the Kind of Fast podcast, the show where we talk running, real life, and everything in between.
So whether you are a beginner runner training for your very first 5K, or you're just a fun runner out there chasing down your next PR, this podcast is for you. We share stories, training tips, and plenty of laughs along the way.
Yeah, and this week's episode is going to be fantastic, partly because I did stack the news section. I know none of you guys are shocked.
Yeah, you definitely did. But there's been a lot of things happening of note and of interest. And so we'll try to bring you up to speed on those things there. But first, before we get into the news, we'll be clearing up a mystery that's a confusion for a lot of runners out there. So if you ever looked at your race results and thought, wait, why do I have two different finish times? We're going to explain why that is the case.
Then in the news, we are headed to talk about the New York City Marathon that just happened and Kipchoge's historic finish. And we're going to talk about a wild sprint for first and second place on the men's side.
Yep. We'll also talk about the latest shoe tech shaking up the scene, a wild bib swapping scandal straight out of Boston, and an update on the Strava versus Garmin saga that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. We'll give you an update on where that stands today.
And then for our deep dive of the week, it's getting cold outside, so we're going to talk about cold weather running and what to wear.
Yeah, not too cold here yet, but some people, I think, are certainly experiencing that already.
Yep. Well, it's going to be a jam-packed episode, so let's go ahead and get into it. Cue the drum roll, please. It's time for our segment, What Does That Even Mean? And this week, we're actually going to talk about two different words, chip time and gun time.
Yep. Here's the deal. Gun time starts the moment the starter, you know, shoots the gun or starts the race there in some form or fashion. I've seen it done by fireworks. I've seen it done by gun or air horn or whatever the case may be. But that's the race, that's the time that the race actually gets started off there. And so it doesn't matter if you are on the first line of the starting line or if you are 10 corrals back and a half a mile back, like you might be at the Cooper River Bridge Run, if you're doing that in Charleston next April. The gun time is based on when the actual race starts, and it doesn't matter at all about when you actually pass the start line there.
So why do they even have it? I mean, it kind of sounds ridiculous.
Great question. The gun time generally will, that's what you base your overall winners of a race on. So you can't have a runner that runs way faster on their chip time, which we'll get into in just a second, in the back of the pack, and their chip time is faster than the person that passed the finish line first, because that person didn't know they were racing the person way behind you. So you take your gun time to tell you who were your overall winners in a race.
Well, I learned something new.
There you go.
That was totally unscripted. But that brings us to chip time. This is your personal clock. This is the one that starts as soon as you cross the timing strip on the start line. So this is your race time. So while the gun time measures the race, the chip time measures your race. So it's your true official time. And most importantly, it's the one that you're going to want to use for things like PRs and Boston qualifying times. That's the run you want to use.
Yep. And they will determine age group winners based on chip time. So think about maybe your top three finishers. That might be a gun time only situation. And they go, all right, everything beyond that, we're going off chip time per age group and gender and all those types of things. And so that's how they do that.
Interesting. I had no idea.
The other thing here is, you know, a lot of runners out there, we want to hold ourselves to the highest standard on everything. And so I just want to make sure everyone knows it is not a lesser standard to go by chip time. That's your time. That's what you finished. That's what everyone does. And so you shouldn't look at it as a lesser thing or not as important or something like that. The chip time is your time. And so for everyone outside, maybe the top three in the men's race and top three in the women's race, the chip time is your time. So don't look down on it.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so I do have a question from my last race. I asked Dean this question today, and I thought it was interesting to get his take on it. So unscripted here, got a question. All right, so everyone knows that when you run a race, that even though you may run longer in the race than your watch says you should have. So a 5K, you may run 3.2 miles instead of 3.1 because of the tangents and the turns and that type of thing. You just may run, or your watch may be a little bit off. You can't say, well, technically on the course, I ran by the 3.1 marker at this time, and that was my 5K time. Can't do that. No, we will not allow that ever. It goes by your final time. Here's my question, though. Can you count your average pace as your pace from your watch and not the average pace shown by, you know, the rate, your race official time?
I think it depends on if it is a big enough race where they have strips, like timing strips and belts along the course. Mm-hmm. I think then you can. But if not, then absolutely go by your watch. Absolutely.
Yep. Here's the example. In my Columbus Marathon, I ran 26.44 miles, according to my watch. 26.2 miles is a marathon. I ran 0.24 more than that in the race. And that's because, you know, you got 15,000 people out there. Sometimes you go wider around turns and things like that. The way that they do the measuring of these courses, like they're taking the most direct of direct lines. It is very, very hard. Even if you were in first, it'd be very, very hard to hit 26.2 on the nose. Just very hard to do that. And so my average finish based on my average mile time based on my time there was 7.11 per mile. But that would be if it was 26.2. For 26.44, I actually ran 7.06 per mile. So I think you go by your overall time, by what you passed the final mat on. Even though I ran 26.44, my time was 3:07:59. That's my official time. Can't argue that. But I would say that my average pace was 7:06, not 7:11. What do you think?
I don't know, but that's contradicting each other.
I don't know, because I did run. I just ran further. I just ran further, and my time throughout it all ended up being 7:06. It just took me a little bit further to complete the course that they had outlined.
I think you just have to do it again.
Well, in the end, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This is when I'm talking to someone. They say, how fast did you run? I say, I would like to say I ran 7:06 pace for a 3:07:59. That's what I'd like to say. Let's move on to the news.
All right. It is time for the best section of the show, the news. In the last few weeks, our episodes have been completely stacked. So I have accidentally, but purposefully, kind of not put as much in the news section. So this week, we're going to make up for that.
Good deal.
First and foremost, we are going to talk about New York City. The New York City Marathon was this past Sunday, and it was the last of the world major marathons for 2025. It actually broke a world record for most people who have finished a marathon with over.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
Yep. Fun fact.
That was the case when I did it in 2018, but I know there's a lot of other big ones that are fighting for that kind of title as well.
It got the title this year with the most amount of finishers and participants. So we're going to pack the New York City Marathon. We are first going to start with the absolute GOAT, Kipchoge. In his very first New York City Marathon debut, he is the absolute greatest marathoner of all time, arguably. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
I think it's interesting to hear you pitch this as he's the GOAT, and he finished 17th.
He's 42 years old.
That's my point, too. But normally, you would say, why are we calling him the GOAT? He finished 17th. I just think it's a little bit of a change for you on this one. He has run sub 2 hours in a marathon in the Breaking 2 project with Nike. Didn't count as an official world record, but he's done that. He held the world record several different times. He is probably the greatest men's marathoner of all time at this point, but he's older and still running great, no doubt about it, but he's not in, there was no chance he was going to win the race this time.
I was about to say, we're talking about him like he ran an 8-hour marathon, but no, he ran a 2:14:36, and we're talking about him like that.
Yeah, it's good for an old man, you know?
An old man. Anyways, he came in 17th, like Travis was saying, which might, I mean, raise a few eyebrows. Like, wait a minute, he's supposed to be the greatest runner and he came in 17th. This was his very last world marathon. And he will tell you himself, like, he was not there to compete. He was there to have a good time.
Yep. And so this finishes out the world majors for him. For those that don't know, those are Tokyo, Boston, London, Berlin, Chicago, Sydney, and New York. Those are your world majors there.
Yeah, so he actually got a 6-star medal at the finish line, which is really cool. And I do need to put an emphasis on 6-star medal. Yes, he ran all 7, but I'm just saying if the Abbott World Marathon, who puts together these, only still have a 6-star medal, it's 6 stars.
This is a strong stance you've had for a while. It's a hill you're clearly willing to die on. Sure. It doesn't bother me that it's the 7-star. 8 and 9 and 10's probably coming around the bend here. So it is what it is.
Well, we'll get back on track on that note. We're talking about a man, like we said before, he has 2 Olympic gold medals, 2 world records, 12 major wins. Like his resume, it's stacked. But even after all that, his focus is still on inspiring others. He told reporters after he finished the race that he's launching a project called ELIDS Running World, where he plans to run marathons on all 7 continents over the next 2 years, including Antarctica.
Eliads, by the way, but you were close. I love that you are taking on all these names. So yeah, it's going to be fun. Antarctica, running the marathon there. I love that he's still finding ways to be inspiring. He's finding ways to stay motivated. So even in his 17th, place finish, he was smiling, he was shaking hands, he was celebrating the sport. He's a great ambassador of the sport. And so I find a lot of inspiration personally from it because, like, I'm someone who just spent 7 years working towards a certain goal and I got it a couple weeks ago. And so now I'm in the, like, all right, what's next situation. He probably is in the same position of like, okay, I can't compete to win at New York anymore. How can I still stay motivated and do interesting things that inspires others? And so he's finding ways to do that.
So does that mean you're about to run on all 7 continents too?
If someone wants to fund that, I will absolutely do that. Yes, count me in.
Okay, well, before we move on, can we just talk about what he was wearing? Did you see what he was wearing?
Yeah, this was an interesting little get up there.
In the absolute nicest way possible, it was unique, to put it very, very lightly. He raced, and I will throw a picture of this up on the screen. He raced in a long sleeve Nike shirt that had like hundreds of holes in it. It reminded, like, if Croc made a shirt, that would be the shirt.
That's a good way of stating it. Yeah.
But apparently this long sleeve Nike top wasn't just some random top. It's called the Nike Radical Airflow. Okay, makes sense. And it's not even out yet. So it's an experimental design that Nike built using fluid dynamics, like literally actually use science for this shirt. Okay, that's kind of cool. To funnel air through the little ducts in the fabrics to keep runners cool. He actually helped test this. He gave his feedback when he was training in Kenya, and Nike actually custom made this one for him.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that has led the way in innovation with Nike for a long time now. So, like, I think of Nike as the ones who really started the super shoe movement back in 2016 when they released the Vaporfly. Some people might say Adidas was the first one there, but they're the ones that changed the game and really put it on the map that these super shoes could really help people run a lot faster. And so, you know, in 2016, he had the Breaking 2 attempt, the first one that he did with 2 other runners, and he ran 2 hours and 25 seconds, I believe, in that one. And so he was in the middle of developing that shoe and being a part of innovation, which led to the second version of Breaking 2, where he actually did break 2 hours. And so, I think that Nike and him have had a great partnership for a long time. And so, yeah, when the shirt finally comes out, I might have to check that out. I mean, if Elliot's behind it, then I'm sure it's great, neat stuff there.
All right. I can't wait for that day. I will definitely put that on the podcast when it happens. All right. Moving on, let's talk about a few other fast people. And let me just put a caveat in here. I gave myself most of all the names. bear with me. Let's talk about the crazy finish at the men's race. Vincent Cabruto looked like he had it wrapped up coming out of Central Park. He was smooth. He looked like he was in full control. But when just a few hundred meters were left, Alex Mosiso came charging up the final hill like he'd just been waiting for the moment to take a kill. And it was so unbelievably close. It looked like he was shot out of a cannon. Mm. Have you seen this?
I saw only the highlight. Yes.
Okay, well, that's pretty much what I saw too. But it was really, really cool. It came out of nowhere, and it looked like they were going to he was going to pass
Cabruto. Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't.
Yeah, it's almost had him and really felt like, man, if he had two more strides, he probably would have got him because he was gaining on him big time. Let me just say, I like to watch these marathons, and I like to make sure that I know what's going on before I come and talk on the podcast here. I've got YouTube TV. And so they are in the big fight with ESPN. And so I couldn't get it. And then I even searched everywhere on the internet, and like ESPN's not putting out the broadcast anywhere that you can find it. So I only saw highlights of this. I appreciate you taking the lead on some of the news segments here. But yeah, it was a good close race as related to that.
I think he won in like, what, 0.3 seconds? Mm-hmm. Like, that is crazy.
But it was the width of your body. Like, it was, he had a shoulder ahead of him. That was it.
Yeah, you can kind of see in the video, they were throwing themselves over the finish line. I would put a clip of it in here, but probably won't happen with this whole fight going on. Yeah. I can't find one I can actually and legally post, but you'll have to look it up on your own. But both of these men were so happy and excited afterwards. They just had huge smiles on their faces, and they were wearing matching outfits. Now, next up, let's talk about Helen Obiri. We've talked about her before on the podcast a few times, and she didn't just win the women's race. She absolutely killed it. She was locked in from the start, and she actually shattered the course record and came in at a 2:19.51.
Yeah, the course record, I don't know how long it was a long-standing course record. I remember listening to Dez and Kara on their podcast last week, and they said it wasn't even a possibility that it was going to fall. And in fact, the top three finishers all broke the course record in the race, which I thought was interesting. So just a fast race out there. Now, I did notice that Helen Obiri is an On athlete, and that is a brand of shoes that you've kind of hated on in the past. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I did have to go back and look at a few episodes, and I will stand by my statement that it probably wouldn't be a shoe that I went after, but good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her.
She won going away. So it was a good race. And really, at one point in time late in the race there, the last three overall winners were all running 1, 2, 3 together, trying to duke it out there to the finish line. So good on Helen Obiri winning another New York City Marathon there. One of the stories that I thought was really interesting from the recaps that I could find was Fiona O'Keefe, who was the top American on the day. She's 24 years old. She finished fourth overall, 2:22.49. That's the fastest time ever by an American woman in New York. And so this is only her second full marathon there. She won our Olympic trials, a race I was at in Orlando last year. And so she got hurt before the Olympics, and she didn't really get to do much more than start in that race. So this was her comeback from being injured, and she crushed it again. So really interested to see where her career goes moving forward, because she seems like a very, very tough and skilled marathoner.
Good for her. Good for her. That makes me so proud. And also, I think we should talk about the course at New York, because it's not a super flat course either. You've run New York, haven't you? Mm-hmm. Aren't there a million hills?
It's a rolling course. Now, I don't think it's like crazy hard, although I had a hard time running up Fifth Avenue, which is probably mile 22, 23, somewhere like as you dip back into Central Park. And so it's definitely has rollers, but it's hard in the sense that you're not breaking world records if you're an elite. Is it harder than your average, marathon across the country? I think it's probably in line with a lot of the other courses you see out there. That's not, say, Chicago or Houston. That's dead flat. Yeah.
Wow. Well, one more note about Fiona before we move on is that after the race, she told reporters, I just wanted to keep putting myself in as long as I could, because she was, I mean, shoulder to shoulder with the top three for a long time in that race. So good for her.
Yeah. Great run. 24 years old. Yeah. Be fun to see where she goes from here.
Yeah. She's got a lot of time left.
All right. What about the top men?
All right. The top American male was Joel Richow.
Okay.
And he had probably had the best race of his life. He came in sixth overall with 209.56. And you might be wondering, who the heck is that? I've never heard of him, because same.
Yeah. And same for me, too. I recognize his face. I've seen his face before, but I didn't know much about his story. So here's what we learned about Joel. He's 32. Not crazy young. He's kind of been under the radar. He trains with Minnesota Distance Elite, which is a small athlete-run training group in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. They have no real big sponsor. They don't do fancy altitude camps. They're just a grinding group of folks there. He works full-time. He trains throughout those Minnesota winters, and he's just been quietly stacking some solid results for years. He was third at the 2022 USATF Marathon Championships, and back earlier this year, he won the Grandma's Marathon, which this year was just brutal heat, very, very hot at that one. And so he's been slowly chipping away his marathon time since then.
I mean, he's a pretty much a legit blue-collar runner, which I love. I mean, it is hard enough to train for a marathon. I mean, can you imagine training in Minnesota in cold winters?
No.
No.
Just brutal. Yeah.
Just no. But I love that.
Yeah, he finished just ahead of Charles Hicks, another guy I don't know much about. And then Joe Klecker, which I do know plenty about, a guy that's moving from the track to the marathon. And so Joe is a story I've been following, and I was interested to see how he did. He ran in the 210s there. So good run for him in his first full marathon.
I wonder how they feel about, and I know he wasn't there to like race, but I wonder how they feel about beating Kipchoge.
Badge of honor for sure. You know, I might, you know, put something framed in my house and like the day that I beat Eliud Kipchoge, that'd be pretty cool. It'd be in my signature at work. Like, you know, like Travis Vaughn works at Upper Sports, beat Eliud Kipchoge. Yeah, that'd be part of what everyone saw forevermore. But yeah, good point there.
That's hilarious. Can we talk about how this man doesn't even have a shoe deal?
Oh, Joel. Yeah. Reichert. Doesn't have a shoe deal. Ran in a Puma Minnesota Distance Elite singlet, but ASICS shoes. So someone needs to sign him up and pay this man some money so he can run full time and see how much faster he can get.
Right. Could you imagine how much faster he would get if that's all he did?
You would think that he could. And so, yeah, whatever he's doing now is working. I'm sure it'd be nice for him to live the professional runner's lifestyle for a little while.
Speaking of shoes, I did notice no one on the podium was wearing Puma shoes.
Okay. We're back to the Puma and On thing here. So true. I did notice that as well.
See? So let's talk about the shoes. Who won the podium real quick? Okay. Helen O'Beery, she wore the On Clouds, obviously, but this shoe gets even crazier. The upper part of the shoe is literally spray painted by a robotic arm. It's called Light Spray Technology, and it paints like a polymer mold. So there are zero seams, zero overlays on the shoe. I was looking at a picture of it, and it looks like styrofoam. It's the weirdest looking shoe. It looks like it's from the future.
Definitely innovative. You should pop up the picture here.
Ta-da!
The master of post-production there. Very expensive, $330 for this. Right now, you can't buy it if we're normal people. It's elite only. But they're pushing the innovation kind of movement on there. So, yep, that's the new On shoe. I've seen it a couple times. It's interesting.
It is interesting. Okay, next up we have Sharon Lodke, who finished second, and she was in the Under Armour Velocity Elite 3. It's a little bit heavier of a looking shoe. To me, it looks more like a trainer than a nice race shoe. But I got to say, I love Under Armour, the brand, but I would probably never gravitate towards buying an Under Armour shoe to run in.
I didn't know they made an elite shoe.
Yeah, I didn't either until it showed up on the podium.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting to me. I would never rule out a shoe like you do, but this one would be way down the list of ones to try.
And then rounding it out on the women's podium, we have Sheila Chepkiri, who was in the Adidas Adios Pro 4, which is actually what I just ran in. So now I feel really fancy.
You're doing pretty well on these names. I'm proud of you for taking them on. It's Locetti on the other one, but that was, you know, who knows on this stuff? I just like giving you a hard time on it. So anyway, Adios Pro 4, I run in those as well. Just ran my marathon in them. I've had the threes before. So great shoe there for sure.
And then for the men's side, it was a complete Adidas sweep.
Kipruto had the Pro Evo 2. Those are the $500 single use racing shoes. That is beyond my price tag there personally. But you had that, and then the next two runners was, they're both in Adidas Pro 4s, I believe. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Can we just talk about for a second paying $500 for a pair of shoes that you wear one single time?
If it got me a Boston qualifier for it, like if it was a guarantee, I would consider it. But now that I've got one, I would never. That's crazy.
So maybe I should try it. All right. Well, fun fact about the shoes. It's always interesting to me to see what the pros are wearing. Okay, last one. And this one is kind of connected to what we talked about last week with bandit running, but this kind of takes it up a notch. The Boston Marathon. Yes, like the Boston Marathon just disqualified a husband and wife duo after uncovering a wild bib swapping scheme. So their names are Birgit and Pariben Elnif. And probably not pronounced that way, but get this. So the marathon investigators actually found out that Pariben actually started Boston wearing both of their running bibs. So his was on top, hers was underneath.
That's cheating. You can't do that.
I want to know how they got into Boston anyway. I mean, did they actually?
I would say that it points to he's fast enough to get a Boston qualifier. She isn't. But they wanted to go together. Both wanted to be this running couple that both were Boston qualifiers. And so he worked the system somehow to get her in the race late, I think is what the story is insinuating here, and have her finish out a race where it makes it look like she ran the whole race at that kind of pace. So tell me exactly what the story was saying here.
Yeah. So a fellow runner in the corral noticed the two bibs and later reported it to the marathon investigation, which is like a legit thing. They do work all the time. And it's a website that's basically CSI for cheaters, mm-hmm. Pretty much. So when they dug into the data, they found that both runners had identical splits through the first 25K, like second for second identical. Then around the 30K, the wife suddenly appears in the photos and then their times start to separate. So yeah, it looks like he handed her bib like mid-race.
Which, hey, maybe you can run that pace for a half a marathon. A whole different game to do it for the whole of it. Like, man, I hate a cheater. This is just something that, shame on you.
Yep. Shame on them.
Shame on you.
Apparently, they've done it for multiple marathons, Stockholm, Philly, and there's one other that's I'm blanking on, but they've done it multiple times, which makes it even worse.
Yeah. Well, the internet caught you this time, and hope we don't hear from you again.
Yep. And I hope they never get to run Boston or a major marathon again.
Yep.
Boom. All right. Well, that's our news. It is time to move on to the deep dive of the week. And this one actually comes from an Upward Running member. His name is Michael, and he asks this. Okay, fellow runners and walkers, what gear keeps you going when temperatures start dropping? Whether it's a sweatshirt or a hoodie, a running jacket, leggings, sweatpants, along with hats or gloves. For reference, I live in Ohio. So I thought, what better time than now to talk about what we wear when it's cold?
It's a great question, and we're all heading towards the winter now, so it's a good time to talk about what that might be. And if you're a new runner to the game or you're training through your first winter, maybe this will help you out.
I do have to confess, in the summer where it was a record-breaking heat terrible, awful running weather. I swore that I would not complain about running in the cold weather, but I think that's going to come to a true test on Monday when it's going to be 25 to 29 degrees here in South Carolina.
Yeah, not cold enough for me to complain yet. I'll gladly take that over the 75 degree mornings when it's still dark outside here in South Carolina.
Okay, interesting. So then what do you wear if it's 25 degrees and you're not worried about it?
All right, let me give you my rule of thumbs. I know you've got five points here that you're going to take people through, but here are my rule of thumbs of what to wear when it starts getting cooler outside. So, number one, temps 50s and above, that's always shorts and t-shirt. This is for me personally, but that's my thought process. When you get into temps in the 40s, it's somewhat dependent on sunshine or length of the run. But I'd say you can add a long sleeve shirt with your shorts at that point in time. If I'm running a real long run and it's in the 40s, I probably am still going with a short sleeve shirt. But a shorter run where I'm not going to get too warmed up or too hot at that point, I might wear a long sleeve shirt with my shorts. When the temperature moves into the 30s, normally I add tights or some jogging pants at that point. When the temperatures move into the 20s, I add gloves. And then when the temperature moves into the teens, I add something for my head and probably going to start layering with a second shirt or something like that for my upper body there. For temps below the teens, what do I know? I live in South Carolina. So I've done it, I think, one or two times, something like that. And I was super bundled up and kind of miserable doing that one. So I'm not sure what to tell you. You need to find a better expert on that kind of thing.
I can't believe you don't wear gloves until it's 20 degrees.
Yeah, I in the 20s, I would say, is okay. How I would phrase that. But I would say that there are times maybe in the 30s I might put them on, but they need to be somewhere where I can stash them in a pocket or something, because a mile in, I would be taking those off in the 30s.
Well, see, that's why you bring them, so you can take them off.
Or you could just pull your shirt over your hands for that first mile and then you're fine.
Okay. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Travis's cold weather running advice.
But you probably have some better advice for the people out there. And so why don't you take us through your top five things here that you would like to tell people about running in the cold weather?
All right. So tip number one I have is to layer smart, not bulky, though, just layer smart. So this is the number one rule for me for winter running. I don't like to be cold. So layers are going to be your best friend. So if it's around 40 or below, I go into layer mode. So typically that looks like an Under Armour base layer for me. And then on top of that, if it's windy, I put on a mid layer. So think about a quarter zip, something around that. And then an outer layer, if it's really windy, a vest or something. So the key is layers.
Three layers.
Well, you got to take it off.
Okay.
Like nine times out of 10, the only layer left is my base layer at the end.
All right.
But I got to warm up. I don't be cold. On the bottom, I usually just wear a pair of leggings. I do prefer shorts, but if it's cold, I'm wearing leggings.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. I also, like we just talked about, I generally always have a pair of gloves with me. Usually cheap. You can get a pair of $2, $3 gloves at Walmart. So if one falls out of my pocket after I take it off, like, I'm not upset about it. So always yeah. Walmart. It's like two pairs for $4. I mean, you can't.
Those little cotton gloves are really good for wiping snot when it's cold. Yep.
I was going to say that. That's exactly what I did at the Sphinx Marathon. Like, I didn't ditch the gloves on purpose. And yes, I know it was like 50 degrees and I still had gloves, but it was great for my nose.
Just to try to add some value to this section. Now, obviously, we have different views on what temps you should add, different layers and things like that. But I think the rule of thumb is dress for as if it was 20 degrees warmer than what the actual temperature is. So if it's 35 outside, dress for what you would feel comfortable with at 55, which is kind of how it'll feel once you get warmed up. Same, 20 to 40, 50 to 70, all of those type of things. I think that's a good golden rule of cold weather there.
That's great. Great, solid advice. Moving on to number two, stay safe and sane. So as much as we'd love to talk about mental toughness in the sport of running, there is a line to that. So if the wind chill is below zero at zero, if the roads are really icy, I mean, you might consider running on the treadmill.
Yeah, the guy that's in Ohio or, you know, we talked about Minnesota Distance Elite, you know, training through the Minnesota winters. I think when it gets that kind of temperature, if you're going to get any type of real workout in, you know, you might have to spend some more time on the treadmill or find a time to do it in the afternoon when it's more sunny and not quite as cold out or something like that. I think that's totally acceptable in those climates there.
And if you absolutely do not want to go to the treadmill, just pick a route that's closer to your home. So if something goes wrong, then you're not very far from home.
Yeah, make some loops there and you can always make a different decision once you're out there.
Another option that Travis is probably going to judge me for is that you can also warm up inside first. So that could look like jumping jacks or squats, whatever it is. So you're not going outside not warmed up. It helps.
I think that's great advice. I have never done that before, but it sounds reasonable to me.
All right, moving on to tip number three, be seen. So the dark side of winter running is quite literally that. It is dark. It gets dark at what feels like 3:30 in the afternoon. And obviously the morning is dark. So wear lights, like be seen. Please, please be seen. I personally love my Nox gear. It's a light that I wear. I mean, it kind of looks like I'm a crossing guard at an elementary school, but hey, I can be seen that way.
Yeah, I've seen those, and I've even put them in my shopping cart before, and I should buy one of those. I went to a run club last night where a bunch of people had those on, and I see the value in those, and I think it is great advice to tell people that they should do that. I don't personally do that. It's where I live. It's sidewalk running, or it, for me, it's a lot of running trail type things. We're not crossing a lot of roads and things like that. That's what I do a lot of times if I'm running in the dark. But I think that it is good advice to make sure that you are seen, and there's really great vests and lights and headlamps and things like that that you can have that make sure that you are seen out there.
Travis, you know that 177,000 people get hit by cars, runners get hit by cars. Now you know. And you know what time that happens most frequently?
No.
When it's dark. Yeah. You got to be lit up.
Like, good advice. So my wife, if you are listening to this, I'm definitely buying one. And if you're not listening to this, then you never heard this segment. So there you go.
Tip number four. If you live somewhere where it's icy or wet, then you might need some traction on your shoes. I honestly do not have a ton of experience with this because, hello, we live in South Carolina and it hasn't snowed in 3 years. But what the internet has told me through some research is they make things you can buy for your shoes. So that's kind of fun. I love accessories. The first thing you can get is called a yak tracks or ice bug spikes. And if it's deep snow, they have other stuff. But yeah, it's just something that you attach to your shoe to give you more traction.
I would love to live somewhere one winter where I had to use these types of things. It'd be fun, I think.
I think it'd be fun one time.
Maybe. But I don't know anything about this.
Yep. I don't either. But you did go run. Where did you run? Was it Minnesota?
I was in Grand Rapids maybe 2 years ago working on a project. And I don't think it got above zero actual temperature. Wind chill is much colder than that while I was there. And I needed to get some runs in. So I was a bundled up snowman out there trying to run and kind of, I felt like the kid on the Christmas Story who couldn't put his arms down. You know, that's what I felt like out there trying to run. So, man, if you live in one of those areas where it gets that cold and you got to bundle up to that level and you're continuing to run, kudos to you. That is really impressive. And so great commitment to running at that point.
Tip number five, and this one goes for everybody. Know yourself. Travis told you guys what he prefers to run in. I told you guys my tips. It truly matters what you are most comfortable in and what, I mean, works for you and your budget, because you also have to go buy stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And so I gave my rule of thumb. You've given some of your thoughts. Other people would like, think it's ridiculous to wear tights in 30 degrees. That's way too warm for that. So it's a personal thing. So trying to figure that out and make a mindset of like, all right, when it's this temperature, I know how I need to be dressed for success for that day and kind of know that.
All right. Well, that's it for our 5 tips on winter running. Before we wrap up and talk about what we're doing this week, I have to shout out the Couch to Marathon crew who are in the middle of training right now. They're on week 5. They are going from 3 straight minutes of jogging to 5 minutes of jogging this week.
Yeah, it's big incremental jump there as we kind of go through their journey. And Mitchell and Dean have taken really hundreds of thousands of people through a journey just like this. So if they can do it, you can do it too. So we're pulling for you.
Exactly. And if you guys want to hop in on a Couch to Marathon, you can. We have programs that you can hop in at any time, but we also have our next nationwide Couch to Marathon program starting on January 12th. So perfect timing for the New Year's resolutions. All right, before we wrap up, Travis, what you wearing? Tell us about your shirt.
I got this Unpacking It shirt. And so I was on another podcast yesterday. It's been released. As of the time that you're hearing this, it's been released. So the Unpacking It Ministry is a really cool one that you should check out. It's one where Bryce Johnson leads that out there, and he parallels what's going on in the sports world today with faith and some of the things that you can learn from the Bible there and connects those two together. Does a great job with it. And so was able to get on and talk a little bit about the coaching carousel in college football right now, which was a fun podcast to kind of chat through that. So I want to give a plug to Unpacking It and their ministry today.
That's kind of cool. I think you talked about Upward Running on there too for a second, right?
Yeah, give a little shout out to Upward Running and the Kind of Fast podcast. So maybe we'll get some more listeners that way as well.
Ooh, speaking of being kind of fast, are you running this week?
I have started back running. I ran Monday and Tuesday. It's Wednesday as we record this. And I may run every day. I might give me a little streak in right now. I've got nothing structured, no plan yet. Probably will wait till more around Thanksgiving to start doing something specific around that. So just trying to get out there and get moving again. My foot is slowly feeling better. It's not all the way back, but it's good enough to run on at this point. So I feel like it's been 2 weeks and I've lived in the moment. I've celebrated the big accomplishment, but it's time to turn the page and move on to something else.
Yeah, I love that. I'm still kind of in my unstructured time right now, but I am going crazy. I don't do well unstructured. Like I'm ready. I'm ready to go. But I mean, I am still taking it easy. I say that. And then I ran 3 miles and did an upper body workout yesterday. But I'm taking it easy.
I think I'm probably going to do something similar after work today. You know, get a few miles in and go work out as well.
And with that, our time is up. Don't forget, this podcast is powered by Upward Running, a community built to help you run with purpose, stay motivated, and find your people. As always, this journey is more than miles. God is in every step. The good runs, the bad runs, the tough days. He is with you through it all.
Yep. This is Upward Running, where faith and fitness meet. And we'd love to run with you. You can join us at upwardrunning.com/kindoffast. That's upwardrunning.com/kindoffast. And if you use the code kindoffast, get 2 weeks free. You can try out all the things that we have to offer for our individual runners out there. And if you use that code, we get to find out that you heard about it through the podcast, which is always very interesting to us and keeps us motivated to keep trying to put out good content on a weekly basis on the podcast here. So until next time, we will see you back next week on a new episode. If you could like, rate, subscribe, write a review, just do one of those. I don't care which one. Just do one of those for us this week. It'd be a huge help and would help others find the podcast in the future.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.
See ya.
Bye. Let me start back. Okay.
Come on, you got it.
I know, but then I got all confused.
Yep, both Nike athletes, I believe. I don't know if that's true or not. Man, I'm just out of the loop. I didn't get to watch it.
Maybe they're Adidas. For the men's side, it was a complete Adidas sweep.
That answers our question about what the top two guys were wearing. They must have been Adidas athletes, not Nike, like I mentioned earlier. So, but yeah.
That means I got it right.
You got that one right.